Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Jill Robbins, Bruce Alpert, Anna Mateo, and Phil Dierking. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley Thompson have a special report on one of America's national treasures. But first, this report.
Colleges begin the new school year under pressure to protect free speech, even when many students strongly disagree with the speaker's messages. Many of the protests in the last school year tried to block conservative and white nationalist speakers, and some colleges that experienced violent protests have announced new efforts to encourage free speech. 15 leading scholars at three of the nation's top universities, Harvard University, Yale University, and Princeton University, wrote a letter this week with this advice for new college students. Think for yourself. The letter said, "That means students should honestly consider arguments, even from people with opinions they find objectionable." Kansas State University recently announced it will work hard to protect free speech. A statement from the school's top officials said, "Free speech is one of our most cherished rights, protected by the United States Constitution." At Claremont McKenna College in California and Middlebury College in Vermont, officials promise more speeches by people with different opinions. During the last school year, demonstrators at the schools blocked speeches by conservative speakers. The two schools punished some protesting students. Claremont McKenna went further than Middlebury by banning 5 students from campus for up to a year.
At the University of California, Berkeley, new chancellor Carol Crist called for a return to the school's reputation as the home of the free speech movement. "Free speech must include speeches by people whose opinions conflict with the values we hold as a community," Chris said. "Those values include acceptance of all people and diversity," she said. "If you choose to protest, do so peacefully," she said in a recent message to Berkeley students and teachers. She said the school will not tolerate violence. Just days after Chris asked students and teachers to support free speech, there was another violent protest. It took place in a park near the Berkeley campus during a free speech event. Demonstrators, some with their faces covered in black cloth, attacked at least 5 people, including the leader of a politically conservative group, the Associated Press reported.
Some of the attackers were from a group called Antifa, short for anti-fascist. Some Antifa members say that violence is acceptable to fight racism. It was not known if any of the Antifa members were Berkeley students. Conservatives and white nationalists are not the only groups whose free speech rights are being questioned. Mark Bray is a lecturer at Dartmouth College and considered an expert on Antifa. On NBC's Meet the Press, he said, "Antifa supporters believe that Nazis and other fascists cannot be stopped with free speech alone. Bray said the Nazis in Germany and other fascist leaders in Europe before and during World War II were only stopped by violence. Dartmouth President Philip Hanlon said, Bray seemed to be saying that violence is acceptable. He said Dartmouth does not accept anything but civil discourse in discussing opinions and ideas. That led 120 Dartmouth teachers to defend Bray. At most colleges, an official whose expertise is reported on by national news reports is praised, the teachers said in a letter.
Evergreen State College in the western state of Washington is another college that experienced conflict during the last school year. It began when some students moved to change a yearly event that seeks to make the college community aware of racism. In previous years, African American students and college employees would leave the college for a day to show the loss that takes place when they are not present. Last spring, the event was changed, with white students and white employees asked to leave for a day. Brett Weinstein, a white biology professor, refused. Weinstein said that he and his wife, another Evergreen teacher, were called racist and threatened by some students. The school was also closed for several days after a threat of violence from an unidentified caller. The threat came after some conservative groups said liberals controlled the college and threatened those with different opinions. This year, the college says it will hold a special program for new freshmen. The school calls the program Conversing Across Significant Differences. The goal is to help students learn how to peacefully deal with different opinions.
But all is not well. Weinstein recently went to court to charge college officials with permitting his rights to be violated. Senator Chuck Grassley is a Republican from Iowa and chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. At a recent hearing, he said, colleges must do more to protect free speech. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
Now it's time for Words and Their Stories, a program from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore common words and expressions in American English. Sometimes we tell you their origins, but we always teach you how to use the words in conversation. Today, we are going to talk about something bad. In other words, something naughty. Have you ever listened to a private conversation? Maybe you were standing by a door or in a hallway, and you heard people talking about someone else you know. And you could not help it. You paused, you perked up your ears, and you listened. You knew, of course, that these people were not speaking to you. They did not invite you to be part of their conversation. You invited yourself. You eavesdropped. To eavesdrop means you secretly listen to the conversations of others. Some types of people are very good at eavesdropping. Nosy people, people who like to gossip, and spies are all good eavesdroppers. The only difference among my examples is that spies get paid and could get killed for getting an earful. Originally, however, the word eavesdrop had nothing to do with spying or listening to private conversations. When it was first used in the 1600s, eavesdrop was the water that fell or dropped from the eaves of a house. Eaves are the parts of the roof that hang over the walls and shade the outside of a house. After more time passed, eavesdrop came to mean the ground near the house where the water fell. After even more time passed, eavesdropper described someone who stood near a house to secretly listen to a conversation happening inside. These days, you can be standing anywhere to eavesdrop. The word simply means to listen secretly to something said in private. Now, if you like, or hate, learning English phrasal verbs, there's a great one for eavesdropping: to listen in on. Usually, our phrasal verbs have only one preposition. Not this one. It has two. When you listen in on something, you listen to people speaking without joining in, usually secretly. But not always. You can listen in on a class at university or listen in on a meeting at work. These examples do not suggest that you were listening secretly. But if you are listening in on a private conversation, chances are you are listening to something private that does not concern you. You are not minding your own business. Now, maybe you were minding your own business. Maybe you just happened to have overheard a private conversation. Overhearing is more innocent than eavesdropping. You can overhear something by being in the wrong place at the right time. Now, let's listen in on two people talking to learn how to use some of these words and expressions in a conversation. And it's okay. You're not eavesdropping. I've given you permission.
So, Amy, I was listening in on the management meeting today. Our manager said that he's putting your project on hold. You're thinking about leaving the company, aren't you?
I haven't told anyone that except Anne Marie. Did she spill the beans to you?
No, she didn't tell me anything. I just happened to overhear you two talking in the cafeteria yesterday.
Were you eavesdropping on our conversation, Alex?
No. I was walking behind your table and accidentally overheard what you guys were talking about. Honest.
Alex, it was a really long conversation. Unless you were purposefully listening in on us, I don't see how it could have been an accident.
Okay, I was standing behind your table. When I overheard you and Anne-Marie talking about your project, my ears perked up. So I stayed there and listened for a little while. Okay, for a long while.
Alex, you're such a snoop. Look, don't tell anyone. I didn't accept the other job offer yet. So no one knows, okay?
No one except Anne-Marie and me and...
Oh, Alex. And that brings us to the end of this Words and Their Stories. I'm Ana Mateo.
Kenya has joined the growing list of countries to ban plastic bags. A new Kenyan law bars the production, sale, and even use of polythene plastic bags. People caught breaking the law may be fined up to $40,000 or face a 4-year jail term. The Cabinet Secretary for the Environment, Judy Wahungu, told reporters that plastic bags are affecting Kenya's food and water supplies. "It is a toxin that we must get rid of," she said.
Plastic bags are used in many countries. People often get them when buying products from food stores or other businesses. But experts argue that polythene bags are bad for the environment and public health. The bags have been blamed for polluting cities and coastal areas. They have also been blamed for killing animals who eat them or become trapped in them. Kenya's National Environmental Management Authority, NEMA, notes that while the bags are thin, they never really break down into small pieces through natural processes. As a result, it warns, the plastic can remain in the environment as small or even microscopic particles forever. NEMA officials have been urging retail businesses and manufacturers in Nairobi to obey the new ban. Jeffrey Wahungu, the Director General of NEMA, is supporting a campaign known as the Take Bag Scheme. He is asking Kenyans to bring their own cloth bags or baskets from home. I hope soon we'll start seeing people who are carrying out these recycling materials or alternative bags, which are eco-friendly. All this is creating much more employment than is being lost, he told VOA.
Kenya is the latest country to ban polythene plastic bags. Similar measures are reported to be in effect in at least 9 other African countries. However, of the 9, only Rwanda has been successful in enforcing the ban. In neighboring Uganda, for example, the move away from plastic has been slow. Officials banned the production, import, and distribution of thicker plastic bags in 2009. Yet, such bags are still in use today in the capital, Kampala. The Ugandan government wants local manufacturers of polythene bags to support its calls for recycling. Some Ugandans are hoping to earn a profit through efforts designed to protect the environment. 2 years ago, Sharon Ninsima started a business for removing plant fiber from banana stems. The fiber acts like cotton and can be used to make biodegradable paper bags. People consider our products expensive, which is true, she says. But our bags are safer than the polythenes, she adds. The polythenes are more dangerous and contaminate the environment.
In Asia, several countries have also joined the movement to ban plastic bags. Bangladesh became one of the first countries in the area to enforce a ban after bags blocked drainage systems and caused serious flooding. In preparation for the 2008 Summer Olympic Games, China banned thin plastic bags and raised prices for thicker ones. Some European countries have started to either ban plastic bags completely or force businesses to pay more for using the bags. In 1994, Denmark became the first country to charge people for using plastic bags. In Central America, Costa Rica has said it plans to be the first country to completely remove all single-use plastic bags by 2021. There also have been efforts to ban plastic bags in parts of the United States. In 2007, San Francisco became the first U.S. city to ban such bags.
However, not everyone feels that banning plastic bags is a wise idea. In Kenya, the National Association of Manufacturers says the ban will cost the country more than 60,000 jobs. In the United States, groups like the American Progressive Bag Alliance, or APBA, have successfully campaigned to overturn several bans. The APBA argues that banning plastic bags reduces jobs and harms working families who are forced to pay more for food and goods.
I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Phil Dierking.
This week on our National Parks journey, we head to southern Florida. Here, you will find blue-green seas, marine wildlife, and islands that hold thousands of years of human history. Welcome to Biscayne National Park. Biscayne is not very far from the lights, noise, and excitement of downtown Miami. But it has a very different atmosphere from the big city. Biscayne National Park was established as a national monument in 1968. It became a national park in 1980. That year, its size also increased. The park now covers more than 70,000 hectares. It includes the northern part of the world-famous Florida Keys. Keys are low-lying islands or reefs.
If you enjoy water, Biscayne is the park for you. 95% of the park is water. Many kinds of animals live within the park. Some of them are threatened or endangered. You will find the huge, gentle West Indian manatee, the less gentle American crocodile, several kinds of sea turtles, and more than 500 species of fish. Four ecosystems come together here, which is what makes the park so diverse. The blending ecosystems create what is called edge communities. These edge communities support a huge array of wildlife. The underwater diversity is what attracts most people to Biscayne National Park. Many visitors come here to snorkel or scuba dive in Biscayne's clear and warm waters.
Human history at Biscayne begins more than 10,000 years ago. Scientists say evidence of the area's earliest people is mostly underwater now, as water levels have risen over time. Within the last 3,000 years, people began to settle in the area. Scientists continue to learn about these people by examining the big hills of shells they left behind. The shells contain other waste, too, including early tools and housewares. As the population grew, it divided into separate cultures. The groups began making pottery and created trade networks. These Native Americans are called the Tequesta. The Tequesta depended on the rich food source of the sea to survive. They were not centered on farming, which requires huge amounts of time. So the Tequesta had more time than other natives for art and religion. Very complex social structures developed as a result. European explorers began arriving in the area in the early 1500s. They brought with them diseases like smallpox and measles. Over time, these diseases killed huge numbers of Florida's natives. Early explorers arrived in the area on ships. The reefs and rough waters made it difficult for ship captains. Biscayne's waters contain more than 50 shipwrecks. Scuba divers today can explore 6 of them.
Among them is the Earl King, which sank in 1891. It was built in 1865. Earl King was mostly used to transport goods, but it also carried wealthy passengers. In its first few years of service, it was used for trading between China and Australia. The ship hit Long Reef as it sailed to New Orleans from England in 1891. Its machinery and other parts were saved, but Earl King itself sank to the sea floor. Another shipwreck that scuba divers can explore is the Lugano. The British steamship sank in 1913. At the time of its sinking, it was the largest ship ever to wreck in the Florida Keys. It was traveling to Havana, Cuba, carrying goods and more than 100 passengers. Most of them were Spaniards immigrating to Cuba. High winds and heavy seas sent the ship far off course. A collision with Long Reef damaged the ship. Much of the cargo and all of the passengers were safely removed. The captain and crew remained aboard. Many people tried to remove the water from Lugano and repair it, but after several weeks, they abandoned their efforts. Today, the Lugano remains on Long Reef, almost 8 meters below water.
Many visitors to Biscayne National Park choose to explore underwater. Guides lead snorkeling and scuba diving trips. These give visitors the chance to get up close to the park's underwater wildlife as well as its shipwrecks. Visitors can also explore the park on a boat. Canoeing and kayaking are great ways to enjoy Biscayne's mangrove forests. Mangroves are little trees that grow in coastal waters. Many people take a kayak or canoe around the islands and lagoons. At Elliott Key, visitors can set up camp and sleep in the wild. At Boca Chica Key, visitors can explore a lighthouse. The lighthouse has become a symbol of Biscayne National Park. It was built in the 1930s by Mark Honeywell, one of the island's former owners. The deck at the top of the 20-meter-tall lighthouse provides beautiful views of the ocean and the nearby islands. The top of the lighthouse also offers views of Miami Beach's famous skyline. But visitors to Biscayne National Park probably are not there to see skyscrapers and city lights. The beauty in Biscayne is quiet waters, rustling mangroves, and, if you're lucky, a visit with a manatee. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.